Wow. I just love it when you're here. Oh my goodness. That's so, I just can't imagine what it would be like to like be singing with yourself like that. And you totally loop it so that we get to hear you and you get to layer your own exquisite different layers of who you are. Thank you, Celia.
It's like every narcissist's dream.
Every narcissist's dream. Good morning. So was that applaud because we got some sound coming through the speakers finally? Oh, praise God. Norman, Cheryl, you guys rock. Celia, you shake the energy up in the house. I don't know what it is, but we worked it out. I'm so happy. So good morning. I'm feeling a little loud, but that's because I'm getting the monitors. So I am a little loud. Oh, how lovely. You can turn me down just a little bit. Oli, I just want to say that's how you stay in marriage for 42 years. You know how to do that. So good morning. Good morning. What a beautiful, wonderful joy it is to just be here with you and not feel like I have to also be fixing the sound at this time. Because I'm telling you, Phil Crawford, I had a job for you, buddy. I was about to call you up here and help me maneuver a stool and it's going to make you hold the speaker through the whole talk. That's what I was going to do. Not really. Oh, so I have something real to talk about today. In fact, the title of my message is real and solid and tangible because I wanted to, I'm still a little high from traveling off to conference and being reinvigorated in this teaching and really excited about some of the new stuff they revealed. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. But my desire is that if we look at what's real and solid and tangible about spiritual principles are sort of the ways we can apply spiritual truths in our life and use them as skills. We can develop a spiritual practice for our own life and then figure out what skills that will help us ease our way through our days and through our difficult experiences and the challenges in life and the conditions that confront us. And so we just need to know that we have something real and we have something solid and it works if you use it, right? If we stand aligned to that, if we remind ourselves again and again of this great, wonderful truth, this vibrant aliveness of spiritual truth, that it will deepen our own conviction. You know, it's like having faith. It's like increasing your faith, but in a way where it's alive. Not that you believe more. I like to say that we often talk about having faith in God, but I want you to think about having the faith of God. You know, it's so that it's just expansive and active and real and tangible in our very own lives. So I found this quote that the founder of this teaching, Dr. Ernest Holmes, wrote this amazing book. I've been talking a lot about it lately, and I expect I will be, I forecast that it will be in our future in a strong way. The book is called A New Design for Living, and it was written probably in the 50s. It's kind of a collection of great essays where Holmes is focusing on this way that we are accountable for our lives and the way in which we decide to design our life then reflects in the way that we live and the conditions that we live in. I just think it's so interesting that Oli is here today because that song was so gorgeously connected. And then there's this whole purpose. You know, isn't it wonderful to know that we are a tithing community and that every quarter we pick an organization to tithe to and that we bump into people like Oli from Justice Center. And then he can stand here and tell us about the good things that are being done in the world and ways that we can contribute and help. And it helps us then feel, Oli, not so overwhelmed, because I'm sure your work is pretty overwhelming sometimes because you see also all the things you haven't been able to do yet. So we just support you, and I'm so grateful that you would show up today and share some of that with us. But let me bring you now to the quote that Dr. Holmes left us with so many great ideas and sayings. in ways in which we are called to, and this is where the theme for the year came for me, we are called to choose the way we are seeing the world around us. Listen to this quote. Let us take a long look, a new look at the world we live in. In fact, let this way that we look at the world be a point of departure away from what it has been and toward what it can be. That's why people like Ollie dedicate their lives to doing this work, even though it feels overwhelming. It's because there's something in us that says, you look at the discordance, you have to look at the fact. That's the way we teach this. You look at what doesn't look right or feel right in order for you to remember personally or for us to remember collectively that there has to be another way. And so we pull our vision, our ideas away from the way we thought it looks like it has to be, and we dare to stand in this realm of possibility that it can be different. And so we look toward a world that we would like, the way we would like it to be. And he said that that then is the start of our new design for living. That's the beginning. And that's what this teaching is based upon, those very ideas. So we come together to remember these spiritual tools and practices and principles. Every week we come together to do that. We also offer classes and discussion groups where we can bring our ideas together and we can begin to reflect on the world in a higher vision, in what's in view of what is possible. And then we stand with conviction in knowing that we make a difference by our willingness to look differently at the world. So we're what I love about our teaching, religious science or the science of mind, is that it gives us a scientific construct. It is what gives us this stable way of standing in spiritual truth. So this morning, I want to talk to you about the theory, the practice, how we can figure out if whether or not we're using the tools that are available to us in our own life, how we might advance our own progression in the way that we interact with the spiritual reality of life, and how that impacts all of us in a greater way. And as I wrote this message this week, I was thinking about how we talk about having an idea of a way we can improve a condition. How do we go back to the beginning and plant new seeds of possibility so that we can sort of reap a new harvest, right? So we understand biblically we reap what we sow. We understand that there's a spiritual theory of karma, that there's this law of cause and effect, and we're always working in it. But we are not destined to any specific outcome, but we are free to decide and to change our minds. And what I love about, you know what we don't talk about enough? Ernest Holmes always said it was important for us to stay open at the top. And to stay open at the top means that we are willing to grow in our understanding of this principle, these ideas, to grow in our ability to imagine what's possible on this planet right now in our lifetimes. Not like we're doing work for future days, but right now that we make a difference in how many, 257 lives last year or something. So he's nodding, so I must be close. So we're going to look at that, and I have a couple of interesting original ideas like, you know, I like to do. But let me begin by saying, you know, a week ago, I had just returned from Denver for our big annual conference, and Reverend Clyde and I were blessed to both attend that conference and bring back that energetic excitement for all the new things and the way that we are renewed ourselves and that he's ordained and all of the greatness that comes with these types of things. And one of the things we shared with you last week was that we have some new classes that have been released. And they have revised our our list of spiritual principles and our list of spiritual practices. I will be supplying you with printed materials, and I'm teaching already. I already brought some of this stuff into my foundation class last week. And what I want to tell you is this is thrilling to me because what they've done is they've taken the old 10 core concepts and they took the Declaration of Principles, you know, that long list, the what we believe statements. We've got them up on the walls out there. And in every Science of Mind magazine, you'll see copies of them. And they took that and they refined it. What they saw was that they had principle and practices mixed, and they thought that we are progressing, we are open at the top. It is time to really separate those and look at what is principle and what is practice, and we can use it in a better way. And so this is genius. This is genius. If you're me, you know, and you like this stuff, this is really exciting. And it shows me how we are advancing, how there is this way for spiritual evolution, for ideas to evolve, and that greater concepts can then emerge on this planet because we've opened ourselves to that growth. But here's the interesting thing. It's not new. None of the concepts, none of the principles, none of the practices, none of it is new. It's the same old stuff. It's just been repackaged, right? It's been, this is my thought, it's been attractively organized in a way that it makes us hungry for it and it makes it easier to understand it than trying to decipher all those old classical words that came out of the 1800s, and now we can have it in this usable, gorgeous way. So I think it's attractively organized and inviting. So we take these old ideas, and by the way, these are universal ideas. This church is based on universal ideas that are not from any one religion, but they are from multiple religious beliefs from around the world and spiritual traditions. And this faith was created on the spiritual truths that are shared in all of those traditions. Isn't that unique? And isn't that something wonderful to stand upon? So Holmes would say, you know, if you ask Holmes, so what's real, what's truth, what's what is God, what is love, he has this definition. I looked up the word real. I said, you know, I know this is going to be in the glossary in the back of the book. And sure enough, real and reality are found in the glossary. And here's the definition Holmes gives. That which is incapable of decay, indestructible, unchanging, and everlasting. Which, by the way, is almost the same definition you will find in truth, under truth, and it is almost the same definition you will find somewhere in the long explanation of what love is. These are universal truths. These are divine attributes. These are qualities of God that are revealed with certainty, so much so that we often find the first letter capitalized, reality with a capital R. Right? So we're not talking on a scientific agreement. We're talking on understanding how spiritual laws work so that we can then prove them to ourselves, and that becomes the science. We become the scientists. Life is our laboratory. So there's something very steady and certain about life itself. We want to understand it, and that's why we have theory. But too much theory without practice doesn't really move us forward in life. So we want to look at that too. As I played with these ideas of how important it is to look at the ongoingness of life, you know, I like to say that, the way that life insists on life, you know, the desert weeds and the abundance. Have you seen the sky in the last few days? The clouds rolling and moving and the color. There's just this aliveness, and it's ongoing and it's perpetual. And as we notice that and we align ourselves to it, we become invigorated with that very movement of life that we observe. So what do you see today? Do you see that which is steadfast and perpetual and absolute and ongoing. So as I played with all those words, I thought of the word steadfast. Steadfast is, I'm an old Bible student, and steadfast was a word that was also always used with a bit of intimidation. There was a fierceness if anybody was talking to you, especially from a platform, and they were talking about being steadfast. You heard it very clearly because it implied that you needed to be steadfast so that you could protect yourself from the evil that's out there, from the evil one, from Satan the devil and the demons. And that was such a big part of the faith that I had had come to practice and enjoy. I loved it. In fact, I love reflecting on it, and I love talking about it. And here's what I say, every now and then you hear me say this, is I loved that faith and that time in my life because it was so much easier than this life. It was so much easier. You know why it was easier? I don't think I ever thought of it quite like this, but you were never blindsided when bad things happened because we expected bad things to happen. Because we were Christian warriors, right? We were girded. We were ready. We were soldiers for Christ, and we were armed. We called our Bible a sword. Is that normal? Do other religions do that, or was I just in a weird religion? No, you never heard. Some of you have never heard that before. Ollie, have you ever heard the Bible called a sword? Yeah, we did. We called it our sword. We went out in the world equipped. And so we were steadfast against evil. And now I practice being steadfast for good. See, you could be steadfast against evil, but you are being against something. And then you do need that armor. You do need to protect yourself from that. But when you stand and know, and you stand steadfastly for what you know, and you stand for and not against, now you can align yourself to that movement of good, that expression of life itself that manifests and demonstrates in our lives on a regular basis. So it is easier, here's my conclusion to all of that, it's easier to live a fear-based life than it is to live a love-based life. Because fear is a primal reaction, think about it. You know, if you startle, it's a primal reaction, but love is a choice, right? So in order for love to be expressed on this planet in any way, we have to be the conduit through which it can express. We have to be the vessel or the channel or the music or the poet. We allow that love to express through us when we find someone we connect with and we can share our most intimate sadness, right? And we can sustain each other through those difficult times. But love is a choice, and I say we should choose it more. I think it's a gorgeous idea to notice the ways in which we might choose love when we haven't already yet done that. And so what we teach in that foundation class that I teach twice a year, you get the basics of the science of mind, right? But what we teach in there, we work up to it slowly on week 5. We call it hidden beliefs. We reveal the truth that all these weeks we've been working to give you some principles and practices that you can use, and you can learn to understand the principle. You can learn to apply the practice in your life. And what we're really doing is looking at the beliefs that we haven't really thought about before. The ways in which we have certain patterns in our life and we just show up and we do things and we haven't figured out that there's an easier way to drive to church on Sunday morning, or those little silly things that we get hung up on. So it takes me back to, yes, I am going to actually tell you the ham story again. So it takes me back to that story where there's a holiday and apparently they weren't Jewish because they're serving ham, and the family comes all together to celebrate this holiday, and little Hannah is in the kitchen watching her mom and her aunties and her grandma, and they're all having fun and chatting and preparing parts of the meal, and little Hannah is old enough to start wondering. She's interested in cooking, and so she's wondering, you know, what's going on, and she's asking questions, and she says to her mother, "But why have you cut the ends off the ham?" And her mother goes, "Well, just because that's the way we always did it." And she said, but why? Does it make it taste better? You know, it's what is the reason you cut the ends off the ham?" And then she says, "Well, I don't know. My mom taught me that." "Mom, Hannah wants to know why you cut the ends off the ham." And mom goes, "Well, I don't know. That's just the way my mom always did it when great grandma's out there in the living room with the men watching football and in her rocking chair crocheting, of course, because all us great grandmas crochet and rock in our chairs. And yeah, I'm a great grandma. I'm making fun of me. I don't do any of that. I actually don't do any of that. So she goes in the living room. Great grandma, please tell me. Nobody knows why you cut the ends off the ham." And Granny laughs and says, "Oh, honey, it's because I didn't have a pan big enough to fit the ham with the ends on it." Right? This is a great story, you know. So, and it's really good advice because it doesn't matter how you cook your ham. It doesn't matter how you cook your sweet potatoes. It doesn't, in the privacy of your own kitchen, whatever, you know, you get to do it your way. But this is the rule of life. It's up to you to choose what your way is. Each one of us. Each and every one of us gets to choose the rules of our own kitchen and the rules of our own life. We have to find the way that works for us. And I think in that statement is the great advice. You have to find the way that works for you. I have to find the way that works for me. But listen to what it's saying. You have to find the way it works. And you can't find the way if you don't experiment. You got to get in the kitchen. You got to roll your sleeves up. You don't learn to swim by reading a book. You got to jump in the water. You don't learn to drive. No amount of theory and book reading is going to prepare you for what it's like to get behind the car and gauge distance and back up straight. And how do you turn the steering wheel, or how much do you push the brake before it stops the car? You have to have the experience, and that's what this teaching is based upon, determining what that experience means to you, how to use it in your life, and start noticing. So at first, we teach that you just got to notice that your life looks a certain way because your life is reflecting back to you everything you believe. See, when I believed that there was a devil out to get me, I saw that devil everywhere. And I saw evil everywhere. And it really did feel like a lot of things were against me. And then one day I got tired of being afraid all the time. And I released a great deal of that thinking and allowed myself to open up. So we say, look at your life. It's reflecting back to you. If there are things and conditions and situations you are experiencing and you're not happy with it, there are other ways you could be walking your path right now. And so there's this piece then of examining your life, pulling out the weeds, the conditions or situations you don't like anymore, and planting new seeds. Sometimes there's not much you can do about a couple of big things going on in your life, especially if it involves other people, right? We don't do this to change or fix other people, but we do this to fix ourselves, which brings me to the point I want to talk to you about, and that is, this is the original thought. I put a lot of thought into this. We use the teaching, those people who have been practicing this stuff, I notice we use it in two ways. We use it either backwards or we use it forwards. Both are important. Both are a part of the process. So when I say we use it backwards, what I'm saying is that we look at our life, and I can look in it at my past and see how the teaching has trained me to alter some of my habits, and I consequently am living a richer life that is less constricted or limited, right? I didn't know I had so many possibilities ahead of me. Now I do. So I can look backwards and see that. Better than that, you can look at your life and see the way you use the law. So you know, we are on the anniversary of the, it's been about a year since our sweet little dog, since the clouds of heaven parted and a miraculous little dog dropped into our life. It's been about a year, so I've been thinking about that, and a lot of you have heard this story. But, the thing is, we had lost a dog, and like everybody else, I thought, I can't do this again. I just can't, my heart is torn. No more pets for us. And then a year goes by, and then another year goes by, and then pretty soon I notice I'm starting to like everybody's cute little furry friends. And so about the same time, my son had a client that had the cutest little dog that really resembled our previous dog. And he saw this client once a week, and he started taking pictures of her dog. And he would send them to him, and he goes, you know you want a dog. Look at this cute little dog. It's somebody else's dog, but he's showing me pictures of this cute little dog. And then he starts guilting me. You know, Dad, it would be really good for Dad to have a dog, Mom. And I start thinking, and he's right. I knew we're good doggy parents. And so at some point, over the course of many months, he starts teasing me that he's going to steal the dog and bring it to me because he knows we really need a dog. So one day, just flippantly, I said to him, you don't need to steal the dog. Why don't you just ask her? Maybe she'll give you the dog. And so he laughed, and that was on a Wednesday. It took him 2 days to get the courage to call her. He called her and said, you know, if you ever think you're going to let this dog go, my mom and dad would love to adopt her, and she's such a cute dog, and, you know, I love her. And the lady started crying and said, oh, my God. We have to move, and we can't take the dog. The next morning, he drove over and picked up the dog and all her pretty, her beds and her pretty little plates and her little coat, and he drove her all the way to Arizona the very next morning. He called me that afternoon and said, are you sure? Because this looks like a real deal. And so it was like, now I can stop, and I can look and see how we used all the skills we teach here to manifest that dog into our life. In other words, open your heart. Now you can call it in. Visualize, look at the pictures. Imagine what it would be like to feed her and sit with her and have her curl up on me at night and all of that. And then that visualization is the image that then becomes that which life wants to reflect back to you, and all the things fall in place. You let go of the fear and you open your heart to love, and love works. Okay, that's what I want to say first. That's what I mean by a backward demonstration. It's important to count them, to notice them, to see how life shows up when you work it, when you become conscious of it. But you know what we don't do enough? And Reverend Cheryl, I want you to back me up on this. We do not do the forward demonstrations as much as we should. And I think the founder of this teaching would really be disappointed that we don't do the forward demonstrations as much. And you know what I mean? I mean that you see a condition and you do a positive affirmative prayer, a spiritual mind treatment. You affirm that whatever this condition is, it doesn't have to be like this. That it can be different, and then you manifest a tremendous change in your life because you spoke your word, because you aligned yourself to the power in the universe that's greater than we are, and we use that power. We align to it. There's this vibrational force for good that desires to be expressed in our lives, and then you see that you have this ability to change your life. And now you are deepened in your conviction for how spiritual principle works. Amen. So, last Saturday, here's that this illustration. Got off the plane Friday night. It was late. Saturday morning, I had to get to the other side of Phoenix. I had to way on Scottsdale side. It's pouring rain. I hit the road about, I had to be there at 8, so it was a little after 7 probably when I got in the car. Pouring rain. It was predicted to rain all day. Do you remember that? Do you remember how hard it rained? And I'm out on the freeway, and I'm a little nervous because I'm presenting a full-day workshop to somebody else's board of trustees. and I'm in the car. I get on the freeway at Olive, and I'm not in the car for more than half a mile, and I realize this sucks. This is big time, not good. I am not comfortable. It's hard to catch my breath. I can feel my heart palpating. I change lanes to get out of the slow lane. I think I might be a little safer, and the car wants to hydroplane. It was just scary. And so, you know, I recognized that, and I saw my white knuckles, and I realized it was difficult to inhale. And I said to myself, you know, Miss Minister, you know how to do this. And so I put my demand on the law, and I spoke. I love to pray out loud in my car because nobody cares. It's lovely. And I said, right where I am, God is. Right here, right now, I am not separated from the wisdom of the divine. That infinite intelligence of all the universe is right here, right now. And I am one with it. There is this one mind of God, and my mind is one with that mind right now. And I know that I travel easily, that I find my way, I get to my destination because I know I am guided and guarded and protected and directed, and that there is no evil out to get me, and that there is a peace at the core of my being that I can just call on, and that right now I inhale and I exhale. And I promise you, by the time I got to Bell, I was a different person. Just like that. Because that's how this stuff works. There's an immediacy to it when you need it. Now, did I stop the rain? Oh, hell no. I was not trying to manipulate the weather. Get it? I was trying to manipulate my own feelings. I was calling on a power that's greater than me to calm me down. So it wasn't like the hand of God reached down and calmed me down, although if that image helps you do it, it doesn't matter what you cook in your own kitchen. But what I know and what I practice is that when I call on that infinite intelligence that's hovering with me all the time, when I awaken and remember, become aware of the presence of God in my life changes, and so does yours. See, it's before I prayed, it felt like people were buzzing by me, and I already knew that the car could hydroplane, and so it made me mad that people were buzzing by me and going faster than me, and that wasn't safe. And you know what? After I prayed, I didn't see that happen again. Why is that? You know, do we change? Do we impact the environment? Do we find our groove in this perfect stream of divine consciousness that we just sail through? It doesn't matter how. What we know is that it works. And what we study is how to use it. And it begins by noticing. Notice where you'd like your life to be different. Notice what you're thinking and how you're talking. Listen to these words of Emma Curtis Hopkins. Nobody said it better than her. 19th century mystic. Most people spend more time noticing their troubles and describing their problems than glorifying the splendor of God. Most people spend more time noticing their troubles and describing their problems than glorifying the splendor of God. And then she goes on to say, if the tongue is still speaking of hardship, its owner has not recognized the blessings from above. Holmes says, everything about this teaching tells us when you're having a thought that doesn't work for you. So you got to notice what you're thinking, right? Pay attention to what you're thinking. Notice what you're speaking, because those words come, they're fueled by what you are thinking. And Holmes tells us when you can notice that, the only thing you have to do is pour in an opposite thought. Pour in an opposite thought. So here's what I want to leave you with today. Sometime this week, you will either be listening to the news or having a conversation with a fellow friend, and the topic of the coronavirus will come up. And I want you to know that it's important to notice if you shiver. This is not funny, Mark. If you should, that's why he's recognizing this. He's been already been using this principle. If you notice, you shudder when you hear a new report of somebody else dying or whatever it is, then you need to jump really quick right into principle. You want to use a spiritual practice and pour in the opposite thought. Remember how amazingly these bodies are made. That there's wisdom in every cell of our being. It is the very reason you can get a little cut and it starts to heal immediately. Because we are children of God. We have the divine DNA in our being. It knows how to do these things. So if you shudder, if you shiver, if you get scared, come back again to love. It is far easier to be afraid. But we can choose love. All right. All right. So take a breath. That was funny, Mark. Take a breath. We're going to pray on this because this is a big one. This is a big one. I would ask at this time for all the practitioners and the ministers and the ministerial candidates, if you would just stand and surround the room. A lot has been spoken this day. A lot has been given in terms of that which is solid, which is real, which is tangible, which we can use. And so as we shift our attention from just listening, we stand in a new position so that we can see God. We can recognize the presence of the divine right in front of us. For right where we are, God is. Oh, I feel the love of God within me. It is this great movement and activity of life, and it is active as we speak these powerful words, reminding us of that union, that way in which we are created in the image and the likeness of the divine, and therefore we are creative beings. And we are always creating our day and creating our attitude and creating the circumstances of our life to be organized in a certain way. And yet, today, with this wonderful way we found our sound again, that we align to the truth that there are our mechanics and divine order involved in all of life, that we can stand in the face of anything that might startle us or stir fear or sadness in us, that we can stand in that, in this great reality of truth, to know that there is always that which does not decay, which does not change, which always sustains and supports us, and we feel that presence of God right now. It is that indwelling wisdom that stimulates us in such a way that our hearts begin to open, that our minds are not constricted, that we release any hidden beliefs, and that we brazenly stand in what's possible. And so if we must be soldiers for truth, let us be soldiers for love. Let us lay down the arms and the armor and walk with this great golden glow of love that is rippling and moving and extending out beyond our personhood and into this creative goodness. It is community. It is our larger community. It is this country. It is this world. It is the intelligence of life in the way that the planets know how to move in perfect accord one with the next. And that this earth, as a as a beautiful blue pearl just spins through this universe in a predictable pattern, in a pattern that sustains life and tells us that we indeed are supported, we are loved, we are graced with all the gifts of the kingdom. And so wherever there has been any appearance of limitation, whether it is a financial situation, whether it is a health issue, we realize that there is another way of looking at this. We break those bands that have been constricting us so that we might allow ourselves to be open at the top, to be expansive in our thinking, and to realign ourselves to greater truths than have been revealed yet. And we open ourselves to be that vessel, to allow Spirit itself to express through us and as us, that we might be a channel for good. And so I know we are strengthened by this conversation. We are strengthened by the words of this prayer. We become bolder and more certain, and we open our hearts to feel that fire of conviction so that we might use these principles, we might practice these truths, that we might change our own life so that we are a part of changing this world. And I am so grateful to know that this is the spiritual reality that has substance and truth and vibrancy. It's tangible and real and solid in every way that counts. And so filled with gratitude, feeling this immense sense of thankfulness for this privilege of opening ourselves to be conduits for love, I simply release the words of this prayer into that divine law, knowing it is already done. And together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.